Hey, quick shout out to ourselves, right? For selling this merch, right? Getting that money, as Kevin would say, getting that bread. Stick around for this little ad read real quick. It's going to be about ourselves. If you want to get in on the holiday walk-on merchandise drop, why am I talking so slow? Then you need to go to our profile right now, Twitter or Instagram, or go to adcraftwebstores.com/washedupwalkonsholiday2022. If you just go to adcraftwebstores.com, you can navigate through all the web stores they have and find ours as well. Multiple ways to find it. If you can't do any of that, you can't figure it out, just DM me, Tyler Kluver, on Instagram or Twitter, and I will point you in the right direction. I will get you the link. For the public, there's a main link. It has tons of Hawks by a Million designs, walk-on designs, hats, hoodies, t-shirts, long sleeves, dog bandanas, onesies for the kid, for the baby. My kid's coming soon, 4 weeks from right now. Going to be rocking that H-Bam onesie. And for the Patreon members, patreon.com/washedupwalkons, you can find yourself an extra 3 items that are exclusive and are a perk of being a walk-on army member, the Goat Wallace design, and our exclusive extra podcast. We have a little running joke, a little mascot over there for our extra show, the Goopy merch, and it's a Santa Christmas-themed design. All of this can be purchased right now, but only for a couple more days. This store ends on November 27th at 11:59 p.m. The clock strikes midnight on Monday, and you are no longer able to purchase these. Don't miss out on getting you, your family, your friends, or the Hawkeye fans in your life these gifts. Because why? Because 50% of the proceeds go straight to UI Children's Hospital. This year alone, based on the merchandise sales that the walk-ons have done over the past year, and thanks to many fans like you guys constantly supporting the show, we are going to be able to donate $25,000 to the Children's Hospital. $25,000. How absolutely insane is that? It's the limited time merchandise stores like these and your subscriptions to the Patreon that donate and accumulate into that donation. So thank you very much. adcraftwebstores.com/washedupwalkonsholiday2022, or just find me and I'll get you the link. Thanks so much. This is it. It seems like football season just started, but we find ourselves in week 13 of the season. A bumpy first bit of the year where the Hawks struggled. But hey, we've turned it around 4 games in a row now. Floyd comes home. The Bull comes home, and now we're hunting the Heroes Trophy against Nebraska, and our friend Jeremiah joins us to help preview this Thanksgiving matchup. Sit back, relax, let's have a day. Let's go. Welcome in, Washed Up Walk-Ons fans. I am not Drake, as most of you would fully understand. He likes to gaslight you as the fans. I'm sorry to tell you guys that, but he is really good at one thing in his life, and that's talking shit. And a lot of that comes in the form of giving me shit. He's gotten really good at it over the last, well, I guess, almost a decade now since we met each other. And you know, if he was on here to defend himself, he would find a way to finagle his way out of this. But he's pretty hypocritical. We move the podcast around for me, and all of a sudden it's the end of the world. If we have to move the podcast around for him, it's definitely not his fault, and it's somebody else's fault. So as you've seen from the title, it's Nebraska week. We have the one and only Jeremiah Searles back again, and a fan favorite on this show.
Is this year 3?
I think this is year 4.
Year 4?
No, I think it's year 3 for the Nebraska pregame, but we've had you on 4 times.
Deal. Yes. Love that.
Yeah. Yes. Most ever repeat guest on the show.
Honored.
Hawkeye Nation enjoys the words of one Husker from the land of...
It's usually because I'm more of a self-loathing Husker at the moment.
Right. So I think it's a little bit of therapy for them to listen to somebody else's misery.
Yes. Loves company.
And Jay, that misery, it's still there. It hasn't gone anywhere. We're going to get to that, but I want to sort of get into you first.
Okay.
That sounded questionable.
Whoa, there.
Come on now. I want to catch up with what you've been doing. The last time we talked to you, was you were working still full time with the university, correct?
Correct.
Are you still full time with them, or is it? I follow you on Instagram, obviously, and I know that you've taken a backed up role and are still working with them. But what does that look like?
Yeah, so I've took a backup. I'm no longer the sideline reporter for them. I'm just an analyst. And what ended up happening was another agent called into compliance at Nebraska and basically bitched, saying that I had too much access to players and it wasn't fair that I could have all this access to sign them.
No.
And it's not a violation. I will say that right now. It is not a violation. We've cleared it through compliance.
Of course.
Like, I'm not recruiting while I'm on the sideline. I'm not running my hand around a guy like, hey, man, you should sign with me in the middle of the third quarter. Like, no. But
Guy scores a touchdown, and Jeremiah's like, "Hey, that was awesome. Hey, if you could just write
sign here right here, line. Man. I got a little quesadilla for you.
So some other agent got all pissed off and was basically like, "We know it's not illegal, but we're gonna report it to the NCAA anyways, and they can figure it out." Wow. And with all the other crap that had already been going on with Coach Frost and like him under the sanctions, like they basically were just like, "Listen, we can't do this." You know, and as much as I hated it, it was probably for the best because, you know, I am in the agent world, like I talked about, and it has really taken off for our agency. But, you know, it's been kind of a blessing and a curse because I miss it. I love going to the games and I love covering the games, but also I don't need that kind of pain and sadness in my life every Saturday for 3.5 hours. So, you know, it's been okay not being front row seat to the dumpster fire.
I could see the dichotomy there for sure. Very cool to hear that the agency and your new work has taken off. And in reality, I'm sure you got into it for a reason. And I'm sure if you had to choose, you probably would have said, yeah, I'd like the agency thing to kind of progress and take off. Right. You know,
The agency thing is the career. You know, the radio piece was, I don't want to call it a hobby, but it was something that I just really enjoyed doing.
Sure.
And I was pretty good at it. You know, so, you know, there's a chance I might make a push. So we lost our color commentator in the middle of the year. And by lost, I mean, it was Matt Davison, a.k.a. Scott Frost's best friend. So when Scott Frost got fired, it was kind of like, well, how long are you going to actually stay here, bud? Yeah. And he lasted about one more game before he moved on.
That's interesting. I did not know that. And I've never considered, because a lot of times that happens in the coaching world, right? Like a head guy gets fired and then he's got guys that he brought in. They might go too.
Usually not the radio guy, though.
Yeah.
Well, so here's where it gets really interesting. So Matt Davison is like Husker lore legend. He had the catch against Missouri, right? So he was actually the associate athletic director for football, and he's been here for long before Frost got here.
Sure.
But he was kind of looked at as the man who orchestrated getting Frost here because they were boys because they played together. You know, so he was very instrumental in getting Frost here. And I mean, he had an office next to Frost and the whole bit, which, I mean, was, in my opinion, somewhat of a conflict of interest with the radio calling and the whole bit. But neither here nor there. So when Frost got released, everyone was kind of like, so was Matt still around? And like his title instantly changed. It's like once he got fired, and then he actually left to go start a new collective NIL group here in Nebraska. So right now we have Damon Benning, who's doing the color job. I don't know if he's going to want it for next year. I might throw my name in the hat for that. I think that'd be a really fun thing for me to do. But also, I don't know if compliance is going to be okay with it, with the agency thing too. So, you know, ultimately the agency thing comes first because that's where I'll be able to make a living and support my family. But I do hope that they don't kick me out of the Husker world forever.
But do you hope that though? Like, would it be that bad?
I can't, dude. I took my son to his first game and they played Minnesota, and like he had so much damn fun. Like he could have cared less about who it was, but like now every time he like sees my helmet, which you can see back there, he calls it like my Huskers. He's like, Dad, you can go see my Huskers. So I was like, maybe one day, bud. Maybe one day you'll return them to glory.
You just are you an emotional guy? Does that make you want to cry?
It did when I was at the game and like I got him down on the field. Like it was kind of a cool moment because like I can remember standing on that field like with my dad when I was 17 getting recruited and like and then having my son on my shoulders like for his first game. Like I wasn't gonna cry, but like it was just a really cool moment. Like it was one of those things that like, you know, you'll always remember.
Yeah. That one would have made the old eyes wet for me. I'm a
You're a crier?
Well, yeah. He is and personal update on my end from the last time we talked.
Yes.
My wife is 4 weeks away from giving birth. So,
oh, congratulations.
Yeah, we're into the
boy, girl.
I haven't said it on the podcast.
Okay. That's fair.
Officially, I've told Kevin and all them, and if you follow me on any social media, you would know by now, but I'm just not going to say it on the podcast. No, just totally just to fine. Keep the lore. But
I respect that.
But yeah, man, we're
Whoa, I mean, you backed it up. Just you've put it out on social media.
On Instagram. I have not.
Are you private?
What's different than talking about it on the podcast? You're public on social media.
We technically have not said the gender, but you could assume from context clues what it is on social media.
So what is this, a game of fucking Clue?
It's a Game of Thrones.
I mean, if you care enough, you can go scroll through his Instagram.
Correct. It's a ploy for you to come
to get more content engagement.
I am going on a deep dive after this episode, and I will find it out.
I will just tell you in the text message.
Well, update on my end on that front. Let's see, Thunder, my wife is 20 weeks pregnant with our third.
I just saw that.
Which is a baby boy. So the tiebreaker in the Searles household will be a boy. My daughter has no shot, even though she will run the roost because she is a psychopath. But it's all good, man. More babies. That's what we need.
Now, are you from a family of boys or a family of girls in your house?
So I had one brother. He was my only brother. He's my younger brother. And then my wife only had one sister. So we both kind of were like, we always wanted one more. I was the oldest. She was the youngest. So we both always thought having one more sibling would be kind of cool. So three is where it gets stopped. I cannot wait to get clipped and have this baby train end because I have a neighbor that's 38 years old and had an uh-oh, and that will not be me.
Ooh. So I got my boss. He is the youngest of five or four. I forget. But there is a 13-year gap between the second and his brother that's just older than him, and then they just had him just so that the younger brother could have somebody to play with.
Wow. Wow, they had a sympathy kid for the mistake kid?
They had a sympathy kid for the mistake kid, yeah.
Holy shit.
At what point do you think you realize as a kid that you were a mistake?
That's
like
a great question.
Like, at what do you become aware enough of life to like put it all together, like, I don't think I was necessarily meant to be.
Well, if you're the middle child, you're probably safe, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
Now, if you're the oldest or the youngest, you don't know.
You don't know.
That's true. A lot of firsts are mistakes, and they're just like, well, we're just starting earlier, right?
Yeah.
I think everybody's got a friend where you're like, eventually the friend group kind of realizes like, oh, your siblings are really old, you know? Yeah. Like, and I have
like, well, your parents are like, why are your really parents old? Like 45 years older than you?
My parents don't hang out with your parents because they're from different generations.
Or when you're like a 12-year-old uncle.
Right.
Like, you're like, oh, yeah, I'm an uncle. You're 12.
Yeah. But anyway, that's a long tangent.
Well, congratulations on your end, and I'm excited for you. Get as much sleep right now as you can. That is my one piece of advice to you.
I was gonna either end this podcast or whenever this came up, ask for Searles' best advice on parenting because we're right there in the thick of it.
My favorite line is, we'll figure it out. So that's everyone was like, what are you going to do about this? I don't know. We'll figure it out.
That's good.
You figure it out.
This is what I've been thinking. You know, why do you stress out about it? People have been figuring it out for the last thousands of years, right?
Bingo.
Figure it out.
Man, there's all these...
Back before there were how to have a baby and rear child things, like, you know.
Yeah. Dude.
You think they had books like that 500 years ago? No, just figured it out. Did you lose half your children back then? Yes, but the species survived, okay?
That was part – a lot of that was on the medical side of things, right?
Right.
Not the necessary parenting side. I'm so glad you guys are on that page because that's exactly – so, like, when we started trying – I know people love hearing about this. But when we started trying, I was like, I wonder if when we do finally get pregnant – if I'll become the guy who's like, I'm now researching all this different stuff. What's the best product? What's the best this? I had zero desire to do any of it. And I realized, like, I don't know, halfway through, about 20 weeks, I was like, I think I just trust that humans have been around for thousands of years. And a long time ago, they just popped them out one by one in the forest and they figured it out.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be good.
You'll be just fine. Yeah, you just figure it out as you go, dude. There's no, like, everyone's like, read this book, prep. There's no prepping for being a dad. Like, there's zero prepping. It just trial and error. Like, you just trial and error. And then by the second and third one, dude, they pretty much just raise themselves.
Right. Right. Dude, third child's or something else, Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that's all the way back to being a crier and your son in yes. Memorial Stadium for the first time since learning that I'm going to become a dad. And with every week that it's gone by, I just get softer and softer. I will cry at random TV shows. There will be things and situations that I see like in the world now that are like involve kids. And I'm just like, oh, fuck, that hits different now. Like that's So stuff like that.
That's fair. That's fair.
I'm a pussy.
I did ball at the birth. Both.
Yeah.
Births. I was a puddle and I'm not a crier. And my wife was so shocked by how hard I was crying that she like couldn't cry. And that, she was like, "Are you okay?" I was like, I'm just so proud of you.
Like, she was like, "I want to cry, but you're doing it all for
us." She literally couldn't like handle it. And like, I'm trying to cut the cord and like can't see. Like, oh yeah, I was a puddle, dude. Complete puddle.
Shit. Awesome. So the business is taking off. You're able to provide for the family, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, last year we had our first draft class put together, ended up having a fourth rounder out of North Dakota State, who's the day one starter at left guard for the Bengals, Cordell Volson. So that was big.
Huge.
You know, we got Austin Allen out of Nebraska, who's banging around on practice squads right now. And, you know, it was a good start. I think for our first year, we learned a lot. You know, you learn a lot about the other side of the NFL from the agent world and from when you're near the player. But, you know, one really cool thing we're doing is up in Minnesota, actually, we've opened an O-line specific training facility. So Alex Boone, he played 10 years in the NFL with the Niners. And then with the Vikings, we played 2 years together. And then he finished his career at Seattle. He was actually one of the first to do OLP, which is O-line performance, with the Charles Bentley down in Arizona. And so we found that there's a huge void of the like pre-draft development for offensive linemen. Because it's the one position, you know, it's the one position that takes more time to develop than anyone else, you know, and even if you're a first rounder, unless you're a unicorn like a Tristan Wirfs, that's just a crazy person. Like, it's not always guaranteed that you're going to be ready to play right away. So we've tried to accelerate that process and we built that training facility up in Minneapolis. It's attached to Twin City Orthopedics. So, you know, really cool thing there. So, you know, I should sign between, I think, 8 to 10 offensive linemen this year, which is really cool. I think probably 6 to 8 of them have draftable grades. So definitely moving in the right direction on that front. And yeah, it's been super exciting, man. A lot of fun, a lot of good feedback from scouts and GMs of what we're doing.
Now, that's an interesting point you bring up. Like, you see all these guys going to these pre-draft camps or whatever, and it's almost always exclusively like skill guys that are going to those things. And
yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen like O-line specific, you know, draft training camps before.
Yeah, so you know, we call it the Underwear Olympics, the combine, you know, because everyone's like, ooh, look how fast this dude ran. Like, and as an offensive lineman, it's like, yeah, you have to go box, like you have to go check a box. But I think the biggest mistake that offensive linemen make is they spend 8 to 10 weeks training to be an athlete and losing how to be an O-lineman. And, you know, you just can't, you don't have time to do that. So, you know, we're doing 5 days a week positional drills and you'll still do your 40 and your L drill and all that happy horse shit. But the biggest piece of it is just, what are you doing to become a better offensive lineman?
Quick second to recognize one of our sponsors, AdCraft Apparel and Merchandise. But hey, if you guys aren't interested in listening to these advertisements, you hate having to click through, give a look to our patreon.com/washupwalkons opportunity. It's a few bucks a month. They go to the kids' hospital. It more than pays for itself and the perks that you get back. And one of those perks is ad-free listening. You never have to listen to an ad again. But for those who are here listening to this advertisement, AdCraft Custom Apparel and Merchandise. Years ago, they took the time and effort to build a streamlined web store service. Custom merchandise made easy. They sought out to create a superb experience and take all of the hassle out of organizing and selling that custom merchandise. They process all the orders online, they handle all of the production, and they ship out all the orders directly to your customers. They even send tracking numbers to each customer as soon as their order ships. Plus, they handle all customer service inquiries so you don't have to answer questions. They go above and beyond and will continue to perfect their systems to ensure that you have a web store program that is a premium, full service experience. And by the way, that's straight from their website. I mean, that is straight from the horse's mouth. And let me tell you, we've been riding this horse. That's an interesting way to put it. We've been riding this AdCraft horse for a couple years now, and it just doesn't stop prancing. Okay. You just heard about the holiday merchandise shop that we're about to do. They seriously, all the stuff that they just talked about, they do it all. We say, hey, we want these designs. We want them at this price range. They spit out an entire store with a link with the customer. I mean, it's unbelievable what these guys do. So if you guys need custom apparel and merchandise done for any reason, home, work, hobby, sports team, kids fundraiser, whatever it may be, hit up AdCraft. They are elite of the elite. And then one more time for another sponsor, the other sponsor of this show, DRF Sportsbook. You'll hear that later in this episode, we were not able to do Ward's Winners, which is usually the premier segment that DRF Sportsbook sponsors. We have been able and blessed to do a DRF Boost of the Week, which has hit more than it hasn't, right? We're boosting odds to favor the betting man, the betting woman. And if you've been following along with this DRF Sportsbook walk-on collaboration Boost of the Week, you would have made money at this point. We're something like 7 of 11. So DRF Sportsbook giving us all the opportunity in the world, and they're giving you opportunities. They have promotions. You can go to Lakeside Hotel and Casino in Osceola and visit the in-person DRF Sportsbook, and you can download the app, ia.drf.com, sign up with whatever promotion they've got, and start making money with the hometown sportsbook that wants to educate you and allow you to enjoy sports betting on a responsible level. DRF Sportsbook, a sponsor of the Washed Up Walk-Ons.
Now, you talk about being on the other side of it now. How much are, like, you know, you're talking to GMs and scouts and front office personnel. How much are they putting into the combine results for offensive linemen these days?
You know, every team's different. It's so okay. Strange. Like, some teams could care less. You know, like, I talked to the Chargers, and one of their scouts told me, he's like, yeah, the bench press, we only watch the first 10 reps to see how explosive he is. We could care less what the total number is.
Sure.
It's like, yeah. Oh, interesting. Like, and other people are like, oh yeah, the pro agility is the number one teller if he's going to be the best guard or not. Or like, we just look at the 10 split. Like, it's so crazy, you know, but the biggest thing that everyone talks about is their tape is obviously the number one thing, but then there's the senior bowls are also a huge evaluator for offensive linemen, because you'll have guys that are from like the MAC or an FCS level, or like a power five, a group of five, not a power five, that go to these things and have 3 or 4 days practicing against top tier talent. Like, you can see guys rise and fall super quickly. A great example of that is Trevor Penning, right? The kid from Northern Iowa last year that went down to the Senior Bowl and was just throwing dudes around, and everyone fell in love with him, and he got drafted in the first, right? I mean, another guy's like the Wisconsin white hair kid, the guy that went to the Quentin Miners, that went to the Broncos, right? He played for Wisconsin Whitewater. No one knew anything about him. Goes down to the Senior Bowl, wins with the bowl game of the week or whatever, and gets drafted in the third. You know, so that's a big piece as to why we think that if we can get kids there early in January and give them 3 or 4 weeks of pure O-line development with an NFL-type trainer, they'll be able to go to those bowl games and do really well. And that's where you're going to make your money and trying to rise and fall on draft boards.
It's interesting. It's a good question, Kev, too, because honestly, when it comes to that, not honestly, you know, college and high school to college, college to pro is going to be a little bit different. But I think the X factor there in finding talent is you got to have a guy or two who just know how to find guys. And there is no quantifiable, it's the L drill, it's their tape, it's this.
And I think you just want to get a good feel that they are an athlete, right? They're not just like some big guy who's able to lean on guys or, you know, position guys out. You want to be, especially NFL, guys that can, you know, big bodies that can move with good feet.
And Iowa, right there,
girls? Absolutely.
Yeah. And Iowa had that guy for a long time. His name is Reese Morgan. And he just knew how to find dudes, not just linemen either. Every position, he could just find dudes in the middle of Iowa or Missouri or Illinois.
Yeah, he's going like track meets, watching how guys are throwing a discus. And like, he's like, yeah, this, we knew this guy was gonna be a good athlete. We could turn him into something.
Legend. Yeah. Dude, Searle's so smart on opening that facility / service for them. Like, that is niche market, like you said, underdeveloped part of the ecosystem where there's an opportunity to like take over. Do you guys own
No. So that's where it's kind of, that's what makes it kind of cool. So it's actually owned by Training House and Twin City Orthopedics. So the orthopedic hospital, we took this idea to them and they're like, we love this. Like, we love this idea because O-linemen are one, always broken. Yep. And number two, yep. And when number two, when they're in the NFL and they want to come back to the gym, well, you have the greatest insurance of all time.
Yeah.
Right. So they actually were like, we'll build you out the whole gym. So they actually built out the whole gym. And then us as an agency, we made sure that financially we didn't partner in it, because now what we've been able to do is we've been able to leverage NIL to where we're going to now bring guys up every summer that are still in college going into their senior years for a development camp. But it's also going to be used as recruiting, right? So it's like, hey, we got sponsors from X-Tech Pads and Don Joy, and we're going to all the O-line friendly brands, right? Where it's like, hey, we're going to go through and find guys that love us and love us back, and we're going to have them sponsor this camp and actually fly prospects out there so they can see the gym. Last year we did it. We had Joe Thomas come out. We had AQ Shipley come out, and have all these NFL guys that we've created connections with that we've either played with or been around. They come out for 3 days, coach these kids up. We put them through the sports performance lab. And then it's like, hey, by the way, this is where we want you to come back. You know, so we've been able to use NIL. And as an agency, we couldn't be financially involved in that, because then that is us giving money to players. But if we are just basically the middle person of like connecting trainer and gym and client, then it's like, yeah, we're just the middle person here, just playing back and forth. But it also helps me in my recruiting. It helps me in my ability to go through and find players. And, you know, so, yeah, so it's going really well on, they just built the whole gym out. I mean, $150,000 gym. So super cool. Super, super cool.
Dude, that's
Clube just had a little accident in his pants here.
Yeah. I'm what we call fully tended on this podcast.
You'll have to come up and check it out sometime in January, February. I'll be up there quite often seeing the guys for combine training. So you'll have to peek up. It's literally attached to the Minnesota Vikings facility.
Oh,
that's sick.
I would love to. That is so incredibly smart. And so then for you guys financially, you see the benefit of it's a long-term investment. Hopefully you get them in the system before their senior year, all this stuff. And then eventually they're like, I'm going to sign with these guys.
I'm familiar with this guy. I feel comfortable with him. And yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, the other piece of it too, you know, is we're different than most agencies in the fact that we have two former NFL players in our agency, one of which is like, hey, I played O-line. And, you know, one thing I've noticed is it doesn't matter if it's SEC, Big Ten, MAC, like O-linemen are all the same. Like everyone asks, like, what's your geographic area that you recruit in? I was like, everywhere, because it doesn't matter. I go pluck an O-lineman from Oregon and plug them in Northwestern. They're going to be similar human beings. We're all just big, dumb weirdos, right? Like, so it's been really easy because it's not like I have to go down and be like, hey, I know it's the SEC. It's like, hey, do you want to come be a better offensive lineman and play in the league and make millions of dollars? Like, let me help you. You know, so it's been really fun to be able to do that. And, you know, there's really only two other ones. There's Duke Mannyweather down in Dallas, and then there's OLP out in Arizona. So it's really the only Midwest O-line development, which you look around, most great O-linemen come out of the Midwest.
Yeah. And you are strictly representing offensive linemen, correct?
Not strictly. You know, our whole agency, we focus more front seven, you know, O-line, okay. D-linemen, tight ends, running backs, linebackers. I stay away from the edges because, A, I hate DBs. Hey. Like they're just really high maintenance human beings,
dude.
It more high maintenance than a wide receiver.
Yes,
dude.
100%. They're 100%, dude.
In my opinion, they're close. I'd probably go with DBs from the people that we played with, Kev. But God, why is it that way?
I don't. They never shut up.
It's unbelievable.
It's just nonstop talk. I just can't. I wouldn't handle it.
I'm calling foul on that one. It's both ways out there. Wide receiver, DB. Absolutely. There's no question.
I'm leaning DB here.
No.
Think Richard Sherman screaming into the mic after that play when they beat. Like, tell me a louder human being. Think Pac-Man Jones.
Terrell Owens.
Okay.
We
can play this game all day.
Hey, if we're gonna play this game, Kev, eventually my name's gonna come up for the most crap talky long snappers who are yapping way too much.
I don't know. The Ferguson brothers take that a little bit too.
Really? Reed and Blake?
Reed likes to talk a little shit.
Here's just real quick, because you played with Reed probably.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Reed was a class above me.
Yep.
In the specialist circuit of camping coming out of high school. I believe he was ranked number one or number two in the country coming out as a long snapper. I was ranked number two coming out as a long snapper. He goes to LSU. I go to Iowa. I always compared myself to him because you're always looking at the class above you like, okay, what do I have to do to be there?
Right.
And then, like, you know, he goes to the league and I'm like, fuck, man. Like, I snap pretty good. Like, basically the same as that guy, but he's just bigger than me. You know, like he just has the size. His brother has the size. I think his brother's taller than him even. Mm. And fuck, that makes me so mad. There's so many long snappers that I could out snap into an accuracy competition.
We rep a long snapper.
Really?
Yeah. Brady Sorensen out of South Dakota State last year.
How big is he?
He's not big enough. That's what we learned. He needed to be about 240 at 6'4". And he was not quite that, you know, but he's doing the circuit. And
I got to 240, 5'10".
Who got to 240?
That's
couldn't quite stretch him out to 6'4", though.
Dude, it's such bullshit.
It's all size. It's all about size at that position is what
So everyone who's listened to me over the years, and I haven't done it a lot, but when I tell you that I would be in the league if I was 6'4", Searles just gave me a little bit of validation there.
If you can snap at a consistent level and you're a decent athlete and you're 6'4 to 230, 200 to 45 pounds, then yeah, you're going to give yourself a chance to make it the NFL.
Pissed. Salty forever.
Happens.
So, okay. And then my other question was how many, is it two or three or four agents in your agency?
So there's three of us. Okay. So there's myself and then there's Zach Zenner. He played at South Dakota State. He played running back there, ran all over, had all kinds of yards for them. He played 5 years with the Detroit Lions. Cool. And then Chris Giddings, who's been an agent for 25 years out of Montana. Oh, and he was actually Zach and my agent. So he was both of our agents. And he approached us both as our careers were kind of winding down about doing this. And, you know, we both were kind of on the fence about it, but we quickly learned how much fun it could be and how competitive it is. I think that's one thing that really gets my gets me going is the competitiveness in it, you know, because there's a lot of petty agents in there that like the ones that called in Nebraska and like, oh, this dude's too close. Like versus I'm just going to beat you because I'm better.
I can't believe those guys did that.
Dude, it's unbelievable. Literally, it was so frustrating.
So that's really interesting. And from your standpoint, too, when somebody who's been doing it, right, made a life of it, approaches you, the implication is like, the path has been laid out for me and I'm getting help here and someone wants to like hand it over to you, but it kind of sounds like, you know, he's going to retire far before you do. And then you're going to take over that. That's awesome, man. That's so sick.
Yeah. He's got a 10-year plan is what he said. And also is very humbling, you know, to have a guy that's made a whole career and come to you and be like, hey, I want to rebrand and I want to bring on partners that I've never had. And like, let's take this thing to the moon. And, you know, we're on a trajectory where, I mean, I won't tell you guys too, but, you know, we have a chance to sign a first-round pick this year.
Wow.
You know, which is really exciting. And multiple day three picks, you know, multiple day two, maybe a couple day two, you know. So we're on a trajectory here that's really, really exciting. He saw it. We didn't really see it at the beginning, but he was like, we know what this could be. So, you know, year two going into that's pretty fun.
And for you guys in your game, you guys can get definitely a first rounder, but even a couple in that second day,
it's huge.
That is taking care of. You're putting food on the table then.
That's diapers for diapers for baby three there.
I might have to might have to quit this podcast and become the fourth agent in this thing.
We're always looking for talent, Lou.
Do I have to be 6'4", 240?
Yeah, sorry. If you're not 6'4", or 240, I don't know if we can take you on.
Fuck, I can get back to 240. I promise.
Can you snap and hit a water bottle?
I still can do that, but I ain't getting taller. I'll tell you that. Probably getting shorter.
That's fair.
Wow. So that is that's an update on you. That's pretty cool, man. That's awesome.
Thank you,
Kev. You got an update on you or?
No, nothing new has changed. Still in the last 24 hours since we've talked, nothing new has happened.
Oh, fuck. That's unfortunate. I was hoping something really turned around for you.
Man, if only.
So here we are, Searles. It's week 13, 14. I don't even know what week it technically is. There's week zero. There's a bye week in there. I think it's week 13. Yep. And the Huskers are 3-8, right?
Yep.
Fired their coach after four games.
Yep.
The Let's Hawks.
Start there.
Yeah.
You want to start there?
Yeah. Well, back it up a little bit. Expectations coming into the season around the program, around the fan base, were they thinking that, you know, Scott Frost restructured his deal, could maybe get it done this year, or were expectations low coming into the year?
I couldn't for the life of me understand why the expectations were so high.
Because the Vegas had him as like second best odds to win the West, I think.
I almost took a second mortgage on my home when they said over 7.5 wins. Like, sure. I was like, there's no way. Like, I don't know what people saw or what people thought, but like, I knew we were going to be a struggling football team. And I think what it was, and it just goes to show, you know, everyone saw that we got Casey Thompson. And we got Trey Palmer, and we got Marcus Washington, and we got O'Shawn Mathis, and all these ooh and ah parts. And the whole time I'm sitting there going, we didn't do dick about the offensive line. Mm-hmm. And that was our glaring weakness last year. And we sent a center in the second round to the NFL. You know, so for me, it's like, what did we do to fix a bigger problem?
And yeah, this sounds similar.
A little familiar to the eastern side of that border. Yeah.
You know, not only the east side of Iowa, but central Iowa. Ames is essentially in the Iowa State, exact same problem. Their offensive line and their running game is ass.
You lose Breece Hall and you lose a couple guys off the front and it just goes to shit. And so I didn't believe that I thought we could win 4 or 5. You know, I thought that was going to kind of be better, right? We've only won 3. So I was like, we'll be better than we were, I thought. But I never once thought it was going to be high expectations. I also never thought we were going to lose to Georgia Southern. Looking back on it, I think that you could see that Coach Frost was a little bit dead man walking.
Was it after like the Northwestern game? And it was just like, you know what?
I think he knew, like, well, if I just got to make it to October and then I'll get my buyout. But dude, we fired him like 13 days. And like,
that was my second question is, what was the damn hurry?
I don't know. Like, I really don't. I don't understand. I was like, wait, we couldn't wait 13 days and save $8.5 million or whatever.
Like,
it was.
Who is pissed off that much? Like, we will burn $8 million for this.
And that's exactly what I heard, Kev, was I have my in-laws are all from Nebraska. So I get he gets the
scoop. Is Warren Buffett a Nebraska Huskers fan? And he's just probably. I don't want that guy on the sideline anymore. And
it might not be
changed to me or what?
It might not be Buffett, but that was, I believe the situation was somebody with money basically stepped up and said, get him out now. Uh-huh. We don't care about the dollar signs.
Yep. Some big booster in Nebraska said, I have seen enough. I've had enough. And here's a big fat check for $8.5 million and get him out.
Dude, that's so fun. Dude, to have that kind of money and power is just crazy.
Absolute just fuck you money, dude.
And
just
that's what
absolute.
You do with it, too.
Right.
Like I'm sure that guy, whoever he is, gives money generously to charity elsewhere, too. But. You could have waited 2 weeks and give it to some starving kids or something.
Can you imagine?
Jumps on his golf stream and heads down to Africa and just kicks food out of the back, parachuted one at a time.
Dude, his CPA at the end of the year is like, okay, $20 million here and $40 million here. And okay, here's an $8.5 million just to fire Scott from. Okay.
Does the U.S. government let you write that one off? I mean, you technically donated.
It's just
to
a booster fund. Yeah, you just donated a very specific amount to the university.
Like, sir, you have an $8.5 million donation in Nebraska right around the time Nebraska got Coach Frost got fired. Is that what I think it is? Yes, it is. Just keep doing run the numbers, buddy.
Run the numbers and crunch them. Just crunch. Can you crunch that number again?
So he gets fired.
Yep.
Mickey Joseph. I'm not even sure what he was before this.
Receivers coach.
Gets elevated to interim.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, what's the
temperature? We beat Rutgers, and then we beat Indiana.
Okay.
And so it was kind of like everyone was like, first, and this is the really sad thing. It was our first like two-game win streak in like 8 years or something stupid like that.
Oh my God.
And it was bad, dude. Like, you can fact check me. It was our first two-game win streak in a long time.
Probably 6 years.
Yeah, probably. And, you know, so everyone was like, Mickey's got us back on track. Like, and I was like, we beat two of the worst teams in the Big Ten. Like, let's take a – and, like, it wasn't like we handedly beat them either. It was, like, fourth quarter dramatic fashion. You know, and so then we go on, we've gotten beat every game since. It's been the same thing, same song and dance, right? Can't run the football, can't protect the quarterback. You know, eventually just can't stop the run anymore. And so, you know, now it's this kind of like civil conflict in Nebraska of what do we do? Do we go hire the big name coach again, or do we turn the reins over to Mickey Joseph, who is a former player here and is a great recruiter, and we bring him back and let him take the reins and see where he runs with it? And so it's kind of this divided Husker Nation, so to speak, of what to do next. And it's, I mean, problem is no one's going to be happy. Like, not everyone's going to be happy unless we have some type of home run hire, which I don't know who that would be.
Was Mickey Joseph a guy that Scott Frost brought in with him?
So, no, he was part of the new. So, after last year, when Scott got renegotiated.
Oh, yeah, he planned, like, his all offensive staff.
Axed the entire offensive staff, right? Yeah. So, he came in from LSU.
That's right.
Yep. And he's a fan. I think he's a fantastic recruiter. I think he's a fantastic receivers coach. I personally just don't think he's ready to be a head coach. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean, if you look at the state of the Husker program, the last thing we need after a decade of irrelevancy is a first year, first time ever head coach to try and be like, we'll pull this thing out of the depths of hell.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And I feel bad for the guy because he might deserve it. I just don't think it's his time, but I also think he's a good enough guy that he'll stick around. But I also don't know.
Hmm. Yeah. That's going to be interesting because I've heard names. I've heard Matt Rhule. Uh-huh. Early on, I heard Matt Campbell.
Yeah, it was Matt Campbell early in the year, and then it was like, okay, maybe not.
Maybe we don't want Matt Campbell anymore.
Stock has gone down. We just said that literally yesterday on today's episode that dropped. It was like, yeah, he might be on the hot seat there if he didn't beat the Hawks this year. I've heard fucking Deion Sanders.
Yeah. I mean, my ideal world, you ready for this? Kyle Whittingham.
Okay.
Utah is that coach. I think he would be fantastic here.
You think
here's the problem, fellas. I don't know who wants this job.
That's the question.
I don't know who's banging the door down to be like, I'll coach over there. Like, it's not a fun place to be right now.
Because Searles,
10 years ago, this was a top 10 job in the country, right?
For sure. No doubt.
For sure. When Bo got fired in 14, like, I don't know who wouldn't have wanted this job. You got a program that's won 9 or 10 games every single year. They just went over to the Big Ten. In their first 3 years in the Big Ten, they went to 2 of the title games. Like, you know, it's like
– a rabid fan base, lots of boosters.
Tons of money.
Money out the ass, yeah.
But now it's not
– Brand name.
But now it's just – I mean, I don't know who's like, man, yeah, that's an alluring place to go right now.
And the thing is, too, is like when Scott came on –
you know, whoever it would be the guy to come and turn around would be like – hero. Instant legend, hero, Tom Osborne status over there, yep. I think.
Absolutely. Exactly.
From the depths.
Quite honestly, after over a half decade now of irrelevance, if you can get someone just to get it back to Bo Pelini's numbers, mm-hmm. They're going to be looked at as God forever.
Hey, what's Bo Pelini doing? Would he come back?
He'd never come back.
Lauren said that yesterday. My wife, she goes, wouldn't it be funny if they hired Bo again?
Is he still at Youngstown State?
I don't think so.
He was at LSU the year before Ed O got fired.
Mm.
And they fired him because they were like, the defense was so bad.
Yeah.
And they fired him thinking it was his fault. And then the next year they were equally as terrible and fired Ed O. And so I think he's still getting paid from LSU.
This dude's
made a lot of money as a hired head coach.
Yeah, LSU's paying out so much money.
So much money.
It's not just LSU, man. I saw a tweet beginning of the year. No, the entirety of coaching salaries being paid not to coach is, I forget the number, but it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Oh my God.
For 2022.
Dude, I can't wait till Mel Kiper is going to get that deal. Not Mel Kiper, excuse me. Mel Tucker.
Mel Kiper. I was about to say, Mel Kiper's getting.
I'm in draft mind, dude. I'm starting to get draft season.
Yo, if Mel Kiper gets a coaching job, then I'm gonna start applying.
Shit, because Jeff Saturday can get one, so it's not
how about that, right?
Yeah, is that a big win for former offensive lineman?
Dude, yes. And then the best part was he pulled the greatest like player move ever, and they've won one game and gave him Victory Monday. Yeah. Like, are you kidding me? You never got Victory Monday when you were a shit team. Like, when you weren't good, it was like, you won. Congratulations. Come back to work on Monday. Like, they win one game, and he gives you the See a Wednesday speech. Legendary. Legendary move.
That's how to win a locker room over right there.
Right there.
Every player.
Work for 2 days, boys. See ya.
That's incredible.
Yeah, but I think in the last few years, there's been a lot of contracts signed by some of these coaches that the schools already are regretting.
The guy you bring up, Mel Tucker, they're going to have to pay him $60 million.
Yeah. Dude, he had lightning in a bottle 1 year, and then he bent that university over and just took it.
He had Kenneth Walker, basically.
Yeah, yeah, the rookie of the year offensively probably this year.
Yeah, and good chance. Yeah.
He is, I mean, good for him, you know.
And it's opportunity, you know. Like, I think a couple of coaching jobs opened up. If your name's on a list, you can just like go to the ADs, like, that job's open, my name's being tossed around, up the salary right now,
guaranteed.
It brings up a conversation because Searles on our side of the ball here, you know, probably anywhere else in the country, Brian Ferentz doesn't have a job right now. They're good chance, right?
Good chance.
And, you know, I love playing this positive perspective devil's advocate to a lot of the fan base that just continues to complain, continues to call for the heads of our coaches, all this stuff. Less so in the last 4 weeks as Iowa has made this miraculous turnaround that we'll get to in a second. But it really brings up the conversation, like, you can go spend the money. Coaches are not going to be the end all be all change most of the time that you're looking for. Like, it's not players matter and other things matter. And it's just like, it's crazy. And it made me think probably every school in the country right now has a coach that they don't want, that they're mad at. They have a weak spot on their team where they're like, we need a new coach here. And it like, fans are just never
happy. People saying that, you know, Nick Saban's lost his touch and it's time for him to retire.
I've seen it. I've seen multiple conversations when Tennessee was going back and forth with them and their fans were arguing on Twitter and Tennessee won. They're like, Saban's washed. We got to find somebody else. It's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, I bet, you know, Tennessee loses by 30 to South Carolina. They're probably calling for their head coach right now.
Well, I mean, the one that blew my mind was Paul Christ at Wisconsin. Like, what are we doing? Like, that one was absolutely mind-blowing. I don't out understand. Of left field too. Yeah, that one was out of left field. And you're exactly right, Tyler. Like, coaches you can get great coaches, but it's so much about more of a program and a culture development. And if you have turnover at coaches every 5 years, you're going to be bad.
Yep.
Like, there's no way possible for you to be able to turn around at the college level in under 7 years. It's just, if you're bad, bad. Now, if you inherit a good program like Kelly did down at LSU, like, okay, congratulations. You've got a roster full of five stars, dude. You should be able to put together a game plan and let those dudes go out there and do things. But when you go to a program that's like Nebraska, that's in shambles, or Iowa State, or, I mean, teams that are not at power rankings right now, like, it takes a really long time to get that thing turned around.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, I think the patience level with fan bases, boosters, and the threshold to fire a coach has just gotten way lower. What do you think is like a fair amount of time to give a coach in today's age in football?
That's a good question.
I think it's got to be at least 3 years, unless there's just obvious signs of poor culture and just poor performance. I think you got to give him at least 3 years. Right?
I was going to say five. I would argue you need to get your first recruiting class to their senior year.
Yeah. But I mean, sometimes you can say that, you know, like, where this guy's direction is going is just obviously wrong. He doesn't manage the locker room. He doesn't manage a game or stuff like that.
I will say you need to see marked improvement by year three.
Yeah.
You know, I think I think you'll fully know if a team's going to be pulled around by year five, but like, you need to see a big jump from year one to year three.
I agree.
Because by then it's like, okay, you've weeded out the seniors and the juniors that were the other guys' guys, right? Like, and now these dudes have been in your program now for 2 or 3 years, your weight room development, your scheme fit. Like, they should be able to execute. In year three, I think you'll be able to be like, we're either on the right path or like, shit, this thing might be going off the rails, which is exactly what happened with Scott Frost. Like, by year three, everyone was like, uh-oh, like, I don't see this getting any better.
Right.
And then we were right. It didn't get any better. It was the same stuff over and over again that we lost football games for, you know? And so I think 3 to 5 years, but you know, the thing, the reason I think that, and this might be getting in the weeds a little bit, but you know, I think that one of the bigger reasons as to why you're seeing coaching turnover and why I don't think it's going to stop having quicker coaching turnover is because of the adoption of NIL.
Yeah.
When you have NIL and you allow boosters now to be part of big time decision makers, because they're the ones funding to bring the players in. If they don't like something, much like what happened with Scott Frost of here's $8 million, get him out. If you don't think those boosters are going to go to the AD and be like, we don't like what's happening. If you don't change, guess what? The money stops at that NIL collective and the recruiting stops. Mm-hmm. The AD is going to be forced to make a decision. That's going to happen more and more and more. I promise you that's going to be a problem leaving into college football.
Other side of the sword too, I think, is that, you know, if you have a program with large financial backers, nowadays NIL, you can turn over a roster a lot quicker than 5 years. Now look at USC, right?
Fast.
Look what happened to USC. They bring in new coach who brings half of Oklahoma's roster with them, and all of a sudden they're a top five team again.
Yeah,
it's crazy that so many people speculated that NIL could be the end of college football as we know it because of what the players would do with it, and it might actually be the boosters and their influence that becomes a much bigger problem. Mm-hmm. That is insane, but it makes sense because money makes decisions and
always has.
That's an interesting, I mean, I just look at fucking Jimbo and Texas A&M. They had the number one class, they have all the money. And what are they? 5-5?
Yeah, they're the first team ever to have the number one recruiting class and go below 500.
It just goes to show, like, they've got just as many 5 stars as everybody. And, like, culture matters. Chemistry matters. It just, at some point, teams are going to figure that out. Like,
well, it's why you guys have had as much success as you had. Like,
I was just going to say, it's why we're able to be good, or at least okay, in a year where we're actually not good.
100%. And you know, that sounds like vomit coming out of my mouth, but like, it's why Iowa has always been the steady, and we used to joke about it, right? It was always like, yeah, they'll be fine, they're just gonna go 7-5 or 8-4, right? Like, that was like kind of the running joke, but that was back when we were winning 9 and 10 games, so I felt good about saying it. But now I would give a lot to be a 7-5 and 8-4 football team. But it's when you have a consistency of not just what the culture is, but it's what they're used to. You're used to winning. You're used to winning 7 games. You're used to winning 8 games. So the young players don't know any different, which is why Nebraska is used to winning 3 games. Yep. And that's why their young players don't know any different, which is why they're bad. And why when we get in close games, we lose. And Iowa, when you're figuring it out and your offense can actually throw a football farther than 3 yards down the football field, you can win football games.
I was just going to say, you guys might be there at 7 or 8 wins if you could figure out how to win a close game.
Nope. Can't do
it. Nobody on earth, Searles, loses close games more than Nebraska. It's unbelievable.
It's the whole game plan. If I'm the other team, I'll be like, listen, keep it within one score, get us into the fourth quarter, take them into the deep water, and they'll just drown.
It's dude,
exactly what happens every single time.
I know I saw the stat, but I don't think that I have to. There's no stipulation here. I'm almost certain that Nebraska, since Scott Frost took over, has an incredible lead as the first place in one-score football game losses. Than even
every loss we had last year. Every single one. All 9 of them last year were one-score losses.
Well, and how many this year?
Probably out of our 6, at least out of 5 or 6. Yeah. I mean, we got blown out by it, but it's literally like to the point now where like in the fourth quarter, if it's a one score game, I turn it off.
How bad does that hurt?
It's but that's the problem. It doesn't hurt anymore.
Oh, no.
That's where the issue is. Like, we're just numb to it as Husker fans. We're like, well, it's going to happen again. Like the fact that like we had the ball against Wisconsin to win the game and we'd 3 and out. And the second we punted, like you could see the stands exiting. I'm not kidding. Like, punt, they got the ball. We were still winning. And fans were like, I can't do it again. I can't watch this shit again. And they just gone.
And the ones who stayed, in the back of their head, they can hear a faint, I hurt myself. Yep,
100%.
Today. Yeah.
It's literally the, like, I've seen this movie before. I know how it ends.
I still feel we focus on the pain.
You know what's gonna be really funny is this gonna be the fourth quarter against Iowa and the Huskers are gonna be up like 3 points with like 3 minutes left, and I'm gonna text you and be like, it's happening.
Here we go.
It's happening again. We're gonna be up two because you guys always kick field goals to beat
sure.
us. So we're gonna be up 2 points with like 2 minutes left, and you're gonna complete some Hail Mary over to the 20 and kick a field goal and win the game.
And did we ever get a chance to recap the game with you after last year? Like,
I think we did.
Did maybe we might have. I
feel
like
we did the preview and the recap with him last year.
It's a good chance. Yeah, it was a good chance we did.
But I still can't believe we won that game last year.
You and me both, brother. I was standing there on the sideline like, holy shit, this really just happened.
The punt blocked, and then it's just like, oh, nope, this is going to happen.
That's when I knew it was over. When the punt got blocked, I was like, yep, that's it. That's all she wrote.
And what's wild is Iowa's defense and special teams, it's not a fluke. It happens so often. It just happened against Wisconsin. We blocked a punt, and that set up a touchdown. We didn't get any great special teams plays, although we played well on special teams. But we're 55 minutes into the game against Minnesota, and within 5 minutes, in the most crucial 5 minutes of the game, we come up with two turnovers. I mean, it's like,
well, who finally told Spencer Petras that it's okay to throw the football? Like, did someone like finally get a hold of him and be like, hey, buddy, it's, you touch it with the laces and then throw it like a shot put.
He can do it when the offensive line gives him a pocket.
I don't know, dude. Early in the year, he looked like he had like five thumbs.
He certainly has gotten better. He has improved, and his stats have wildly turned around since the Ohio State game. He's in the bottom five quarterbacks in the Big Ten. It's not a mystery, but he is serviceable when he gets a pocket. He is much more in rhythm, and so is every quarterback, right?
Right.
But like early on, our offensive—I mean, you would have puked.
Oh, I watch it every Saturday, bud. Dude, trust me. I watch our offensive line get ran around like turnstiles.
It's this. It's like they're eating them for breakfast. And
have you been able to watch any of the Iowa games this year?
I watched a lot. I mean, the South Dakota State game was, I watched every one of those because I was actually talking, I was maybe going to recruit a kid off South Dakota State. So I was watching that game, and like, that was one of those painful games I think I've ever watched in my entire life.
Bro, sitting in the stands, that was, I'm just glad they sell beer in the stadium now, but
that game sober live. No way. No chance.
What has been your take on the Iowa offensive line from the games that you've been able to watch of them?
You know, for me, it's just the lack of consistency for them. You know, I think a lot of times it's like one series, they look really good and they're all on the same page and things are clicking. And then all of a sudden, and I don't know what happens, but something just goes completely off the rails. And it's usually one guy, but it's usually one guy like every other series. So it's like one time it's the tackle, one time it's the guard, and then the center, and then everyone takes their turn. And when that happens, like, you ruin a drive, you ruin a series. It's a negative play, a TFL. And like, the inconsistency play from tackle to tackle has been the downfall for you guys.
Yeah.
And I think the other obvious thing is you guys are not built to play in third and long. So when you guys are not successful on first and second down, like, it's just a recipe for disaster. And that's the thing that I think in the last 4 weeks has been the biggest turnaround. Yep. Is your guys' success on first and second down has equivalated to putting yourselves in third and manageables and being able to have him throw the quick slant or the quick hook and not having to have these long developing over crossing routes that you guys just aren't built to protect for or complete.
Yeah, I think the clearest thing from this season is really struggled to pick up pressure. And on those third and longs, when games we haven't been able to establish a run game, so we're in third and long a lot. They're bringing pressure, and we have a quarterback who doesn't do well when he's pressured. Right,
right.
It's kind of been the formula to give our offensive troubles, and we've been in a situation that we're not good at a lot this year.
You make a good point, Kev. As a defensive guy, I mean, you have just got to be licking your chops when you know, okay, they're throwing and we're going to send pressure and this guy can't use his legs. So,
oh my God, it's so much easier to play a quarterback who you're not worried about getting out of the pocket. It's makes life infinitely more easy as a back seven guy.
It's partially why I hated playing Adrian Martinez, is because he could get out. And, and Casey can too, a little bit, right? Like,
yeah, not quite as the home run threat, but yeah, he can move better than Chuba Purdy, who we had back there.
Oh, Chuba, he
was allergic to the forward pass, so we had to get him out.
Yeah, he's also he's really prone to just laying down in that end zone.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, who's suiting up on Friday? I know you guys have some injury problems going on over there.
I'm pretty sure Casey. So Casey will be the quarterback. I think he'll be the one. He'll be good to go. He played the whole game last time. But you know, watching your guys' D line and talk about pressure, like what's great about your guys' defense is you don't have to send pressure to create pressure, which is part of the reason why you guys have so many damn turnovers.
Yep.
Because when you just rush four and you can affect the quarterback and you can affect his throwing, there's a lot of guys back there to cover those guys. You know, so I think Casey's going to suit up. I think that we're going to try and do what we did against Minnesota and Wisconsin, which is establish the run a little bit. But Mark Whipple can't help himself but throw the football over the yard. Yeah. You know, so
might,
I think
might want to be careful with who we got.
I know
back there.
Might want to watch yourself there. But, you know, we have Trey Palmer, who's a pretty damn good receiver. You know, he's put up some ungaudy numbers at times this year. Marcus Washington, you know, we have some good threat back there, but again, it goes all the way back. Like you said, Kevin, if we can't protect the quarterback, like there's going to be turnovers because it's forced throws. It's early on the passing tree. It's all those things. And yeah, even though Casey can get out of the pocket, he's been dinged up. He's being beat. Like, I really do think that this is going to be a classic Big Ten who can run the football the most and control the ball and keep it from the other people.
I would say Nebraska's really in for it and going to have trouble even staying in the game if Iowa scores early. Because when that happens, the Iowa defense almost feeds off of that and they start to boa constrict even more.
I think
then you have to play from behind, then you have to throw the ball and it just plays right into their
game. If we turn the ball over once in the first quarter, it's going to get ugly because your guys' offense is built very similar to Minnesota's, where it's like you turn the ball over, you're not going to get the ball back in the first quarter. And right. Now all of a sudden it's like you had three possessions in the first half and you're down 17-0.
Dude, Minnesota just did that to us this week. Yes. Ibrahim
ran eight possessions the whole game.
Still won. Found a dub.
Still won. Yeah, find a way.
Abraham, what do you have, 263 yards rushing or something crazy like that?
They gave him the ball a lot. That guy is not practicing this week.
Part of the reason, like, he's probably not going to get drafted because people are going to look at him and be like, bruh.
His shelf life is
you were rode hard and put away wet multiple times. Like, you got you got some miles on you, pal.
He'd probably be in the NFL this year if he didn't tear the Achilles last year.
100%.
Yeah, no doubt. And he will still get drafted, but
yes, but it won't be very high. I don't think it'll be very high.
And maybe somebody gets a steal and he's able to stay healthy, but man, he's taking a beating.
Well, I'll give you a little agent wisdom as I was doing some research. So he'll be 25 years old when the draft hits. There has never been a draftable running back at 25.
Wow.
There has been five drafts running backs at 24. Devonta Booker is the most noticeable one who's had the only kind of long career. Everyone else, you would never even know their name if I told you to them.
That's crazy.
So there is a piece to that age matters a lot, especially at that position, because you don't necessarily get two contracts out of those running backs. And right. So you don't draft guys super high that you don't anticipate re-signing.
If there was a prop bet on Mo Ibrahim making it to a second contract in the NFL, I might put the mortgage on it not happening.
No, I don't think. I mean, it's the Monty Ball treatment, right? Like, Monty Ball at Wisconsin ran forever and lasted 2 years in the NFL because his body was just destroyed.
Yeah.
I mean, he came back and to break a record and, you know, congratulations, you got that record. If it's worth it to you, I mean, kudos to you. But
it wasn't. It wasn't.
It absolutely wasn't.
So that, I mean, we've kind of exhausted it, but any more thoughts on this weekend? And then where does, you know, from your perspective, where does a program like Nebraska kind of go from here. They're going to be at best 4-8, right? With a moral victory over Iowa, but probably not. 9-point dog in Kinnick Stadium, and Iowa's fighting to go to the Big Ten Championship. So,
which is wild to me that you guys still have a chance to go to that.
Well, give us your thoughts on that. What do you think about this?
The West is just an absolute dumpster fire. West, like if you get a chance to go to the Big Ten Championship, congratulations. You just got a chance to go get your teeth kicked in by either Michigan or Ohio State.
And like, we'll do it again and again.
We'll just keep doing it over and over and over again. No, but I think that with the way that your defense has played all year, like everyone knew that if your offense could just figure it out and not be elite, just manageable, you would be
average,
the best team in the,
man,
you'd be
average, the best team. Average offense, man. That's all we
you'd
want.
Be the best team in the West. Like you look at Illinois and you look at Purdue and even Minnesota, it's like they're all on down years. Like in your team with your defense, you're like, you'll always be a higher level team just because of what you can do on defense. The question was always, will you be able to score more than 10 points?
Right.
And like, that was the issue year.
On games that we scored more than 10 points, I think we've only lost one of them.
Right. You know, so I think the goal for this week is going to be to get to 17. Like yep. if you get to 17 this week, you're going to win. Now, I think if you win, you have a chance to go to the Big Ten Championship. Like I said, yeah, Ohio State or whoever is going to be able to go do their thing. But I think you guys are right now the best team in the West, which, again, I hate saying it, but like looking around at what happened. But again, Illinois showed some fight against Michigan last week. Like, I think the gap is closing in the West of there's no clear like Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota. Like, it's very fluid at the top. But I do think
and it's going to be open for the next couple of years, probably.
Right. I don't see a team grabbing it and running and being like, we are the top team in the West,
or a team that's just like loaded with young talent that just needs like a year or two away or something like mm-hmm. that. I don't know. I have no forecast for the West.
No idea.
Who knows if there's even going to be a West?
I was just talking about realignment. I don't know if
USC
it will be.
And UCLA. Yeah,
how do you guys feel about that? I'm sure you guys have talked about it before, but what are our thoughts on SC and UCLA?
Weird, man. I don't know.
I think this is where it becomes a stretch, right? You know, you add Rutgers and Maryland in, and they're out there by Penn State, and
right,
they're weird. And it, you know, there's 14 teams in what's called the Big Ten, and it's already kind of weird. But to go way out to California, and I get it from the financial side and the brand side, and like conferences are looking to get bigger, and it has to do with TV deals and all this stuff. It's going to make it really weird. I don't know if they just throw fucking Purdue in the East now and then give us those two to balance it and make it eight team divisions, or if they just scrap divisions and they go, hey, you get random draw and then it's just straight up best record and the top two teams play. That would be interesting. I don't know.
Isn't that what the SEC is talking about doing? I think I read something where they were talking
doing away with Texas, conferences. Oklahoma come, they'll be a 16
right.
team league as well, right?
I can't wait for Texas and Oklahoma to get dragged through the SEC.
Oh my God.
The old Big 12er in me cannot wait to see it.
So I really don't know. It's weird. But like you guys said, the West is going to be open. And I think, I do think in the Big Ten Championship game, if Michigan finds a way to beat Ohio State. And that's a big if. The game this weekend is going to be
that big of an if. If Blake Corum's healthy, it's an 8.5-point line. I don't hate it.
You nailed it, though. It's Corum. Corum is the ultimate X factor if they have a chance or not.
100%. 100%. And if it's Michigan and it's a rematch against Michigan, like you said, Illinois found a way to make them struggle in the Big House this past weekend. And what happened that first game against Iowa, and both teams are different now, so it's not apples to apples here, but they played an extremely clean game. Iowa didn't get a turnover that game, and we only lost by 11, granted, or 13. Our last touchdown was a bit of a scrap touchdown. Nonetheless, it wasn't Ohio State 48-point blowout or whatever that was for us. I think if we can get Michigan, you know, get them late into that first half within a score, grab a couple turnovers, I think we can make it a game versus them. And if we get into the fourth quarter versus a team, we will play. We will find a way. But
Michigan is a team that I think we beat 2 times out of 10. Ohio State,
half a time out of 10.
Yeah.
If the weather's nice, like the reason Michigan won last year is because it was a shit weather game in Ann Arbor, snow coming down, windy, and Ohio State couldn't throw it all over the yard. and awesome they just ground and pound. So much fun. But I think at Ohio State, weather's supposed to be gorgeous. Like, if Smith and Jigba's back, like, that team's weapons on offense are just terrifying.
Their running back's a little torn up, though, I think, right?
I mean, I'm sure there's some other five-star sitting in the stable just getting ready to have his coming out party.
No, well, that's the problem. You could probably just put Marvin Harrison's son at running back for the day and they'd be fine. Like, you just, they're stupid athletic and talented. I mean,
you've got two tackles that are arguably first rounders for them, and Paris Johnson and who's the other ginormous human being? He's like 6'10".
Oh my
Dwan
God.
Dwan Jones.
The dude has the biggest head I've ever seen.
I don't know how it fits in a helmet, dude.
Unbelievable.
No idea.
He's huge. Like,
that's a lot of CTE for later in life.
Dude, that team, Ohio State's one of the most talented teams in the country, rightfully so. But I mean, that's the thing. If they can get clicking on offense, there's no one that can cover them long enough.
Yeah, it's wild.
Do you have a, you know, we'll wrap this up here. Do you have a prediction for your final four teams?
I think if TCU, so it's going to be Georgia. I think it's going to be Georgia. I think if TCU wins out, we got to give them a shake.
If they
win the Big 12, you got to give them a shake.
Absolutely.
I think if SC wins out, you got to give them a shake too. And then that fourth team for me is like, it's going to be Ohio State or Michigan. Now, I don't know where you put them. Now, I think you got to put them at two, whoever wins out, but I don't think you can put them both in. I think
what's the argument between the loser of that game, assuming the winner goes on to win the
Big Ten championship,
the
right?
Loser of that game versus a Clemson, right?
Yeah. It's the weirdest thing. You get punished for losing games late in the season, but you do. Like, that's just the way it is. Like, you could drop one early and still be like, oh, you're still okay, but you lose the last game of the year. Like, you're basically screwed of getting in.
It is weird.
Even if it's against the number two team.
Even if it's against the number two team in the country. Like, you're just kind of screwed of getting in. Like, I don't think you can have two Big Ten teams in. I just really don't. You have one Big Ten champion.
I think you need help, right? You need SC to drop a game. You need TCU to drop a game.
I don't see TCU losing again. I don't.
Well, they've got Iowa State.
And then who
Big Ten champ? Big
Kansas State, maybe in the championship. Yeah,
who's the likely draw for them in the Big 12?
Probably Kansas State.
Yeah. I think it's K-State.
Justin Joyce down there at K-State.
They could do it. But I think TCU, I think they're a destiny team. They're going to do it. It's their one year, right?
SC's got a couple tough games ahead of them, though.
Yeah, I mean, they still have to play.
They've got a Notre Dame team who's been playing really good the last month or so.
Yep, they figured it out.
Probably Oregon in the impact.
Yeah, but if Bo Nix is hurt, Oregon ain't shit.
Yeah,
like, right. He's a stud. That does not look like the same quarterback I watched at Auburn for 3 years.
Yeah,
he put it all together when he got out of there.
Yeah.
Kev, I'm going to assume that you don't have Ward's winners ready yet.
You are correct. I completely forgot. This is Monday.
Well, night. It's a Monday night podcast, and those usually we do little odds here. We take.
Oh yeah, I remember.
I'm a
regular.
Game, yeah, sure. The line on the Iowa game is 9. I think it opened.
I saw it actually moved to 10.5.
10.5.
A lot of action coming in on the Hawks.
I'm not gonna put out a pick, but might be on the Huskers on that one.
I'm taking the Huskers. It's going to be a one-score game. You kidding me?
It has been the last 4 years. How can it
be a one-score game? So, yeah, we're going to cover that, but we're going to lose.
That's exactly where I think it's going to land. I think it's going to be a 3-7-point game. And
that, you guys just find like a way to win in the fourth.
Yeah. Right, exactly. That's just where it feels like it's going to be. Until it doesn't happen, you can't not go with that. So, well, I know the fans appreciate you coming back on, and we've run you late. You talked about getting as much sleep as you can. You've got two kids and one on the way.
Oh, you eventually just learn you don't need it. Like, but as a first-time parent, you eventually just learn sleep is a figment of your imagination.
That's
Fugazi, fairy dust. It doesn't fucking exist.
All right, that's not good.
Clue likes his sleep.
Can I take the kid back?
Yeah. Just shove it back in. Weird.
Thank you for coming on.
Dude, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. I look forward to this every single year.
We need to we said we were gonna do it last year and then things got a little bit crazy. We will bring you on in the off season, like around draft time.
Draft time. Do it.
And that will be a, we can go off on 100 different things that aren't relevant to in-season stuff. So that'll be really fun and enlightening on our side.
Yes, let's do it. Let's plan for April.
Cool. Awesome. Kevin, Jeremiah Searles, myself, the Cornhuskers take on the Hawkeyes on Friday. And it's probably going to be a one-score game. Hopefully the Hawks end up in the Big Ten title game, and we'll talk to you about that next Monday. Until then, 371 of the podcast. See you next time. Peace.
Go Big Red.